It's Thursday, August 27th, and you're listening to Real in the Field Goals, where myself, Kenneth Arthur, a writer for Field Goals, Rolling Stone, the AV Club, Sports on Earth, and Danny Kelly, managing editor at Field Goals, as well as football writer, NFL writer at SB Nation, just talk about football, usually the Seahawks, and we are sponsored by the Ballard Agency. 50 years in the insurance business, a family owned and operated in Kirkland, Washington. Make sure to check out the Ballard Agency. Go to ballardagency.com and tell them that Field Goals sent you. Please do this. And so today's episode is a special episode where me and Danny are going to be dropping some Field Goals podcast related news. So we talked to are two of our good friends that we're going to be doing new podcasts with, and we'll have those interviews with coming up soon. Danny, any thoughts here on the new news?
Yeah, I mean, it's just exciting. We got some additional shows this year to kind of augment all of our written content at the site. So we're going to have, I guess I'll just go ahead and say, we're going to have a college football podcast with Kenny.
It's really a draft podcast.
Sorry. Yeah, we're gonna have a draft podcast, NFL draft / college football / Seahawks podcast with Seahawk draft blogs, Rob Staten, you know, a well-known guy around here, really great resource, also a professional radio personality in Britain.
Yeah, and that's called 3000 NFL Mock Draft, and it'll be coming out Tuesdays, where me and Rob are basically gonna be talking about players during the college football season and how they relate to the 2016 NFL draft, and just sort of giving you an insight into what players you should be paying attention to, perhaps ones that'll fit on the Seahawks, who's going up, who's going down, and just basically see how someone like Rob, who does mock drafts every year, has been writing about college football as good as anybody for the last, you know, I don't know how long he's been doing it. I'm going to say 7 or 8, maybe longer years. Yeah. Yeah. But also, like, if you just pay attention to Seahawks draft blog or what he says here on Field Goals, he is deathly accurate. His favorite players in the draft usually go on to success. He said Frank Clark was a top 3 prospect that fell because of his off-field issues, and so far Frank Clark looks exactly like that. He predicted the thing the morning of when nobody had heard of Frank Clark. He said, well, this is going to be the guy. And also, you know, I want to say, like, some of his favorite players in past drafts have turned out to be great. I know he wanted the Seahawks to draft Joel Bentonio last year. Yeah. They didn't, but Joel obviously went on to be, in his first rookie season, just one of the best guards in football.
Yeah, it's going to be a really great podcast. I can't wait to hear that. Can't wait to I think it'll make everyone a little more prepared during the year to really gear up for the draft. And so that's going to be great. The other thing that we're going to start doing, Jackson Bevins and I are going to do a NFL picks podcast every week, going through the entire schedule of that week and breaking down games and giving our picks. I know Jackson's had a picks column in the past that people really loved. He kind of ran out of time in terms of real life took over. In terms of writing that article, but I think this is a better way to kind of try and get that information out without having to spend 7 hours or whatever it is writing an article. So look for that coming up every week as well. And that is called Deep Balls.
Right. That is 3000 NFL Mock Draft and Deep Balls. Those things you can look out for sure. And then Danny and myself also might be doing some post, like some immediate reaction post game stuff.
Yeah.
After the Seahawks games this year. So also make sure to pay attention to that. I know a lot of people come to Field Goals anyway after every game, so it'll just be there, I think. So there's that. So it's a long podcast today, so let's just get right to it. Exactly. And throw it over to us talking to Rob. We promote the show, but also after 2 preseason games, Rob gives a lot of great insight on these young players. We're here with Rob Staten of Seahawks Draft Blog, and the reason that Rob is here, one of our 2 guests this week that we'll be talking to, is we want to talk about a new show coming out, a new podcast that will be just me and Rob, and it's called 3000 NFL Mock Draft. And The purpose of the show is basically to teach people about the players in college football presently, but specifically in mind with how those guys project or profile for the upcoming NFL draft. Rob, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm great, Kenny. It's great that to be back on the podcast. I'm really looking forward to the end of this long few months without proper football, and we're getting close now.
Right, and it's definitely, we've actually, you know, there's so much talking and so little seeing that, you know, you kind of don't get a sense of what's going to happen. But now that we've got a couple preseason games, we are starting to get a sense of some of these rookies, and we'll talk about them in a second here. But the reason that I wanted to do this podcast with Rob is I think, you know, he's come on quite a bit when we had the Google Hangouts, you know, in 2013, I think, in 2014, and then our live draft commentary has always done pretty well. And I think, you know, it's nice when you can get an American and a Brit talking, then you get that contrast of accents and such. But yeah, I've always had a good time talking to Rob. And the thing I like about the reason that it's called 3000 NFL Mock Draft is, you know, people love mock drafts. Even the sometimes you get mock drafts. Obviously, right now there's a lot of drafts for the 2016, which are going to be wholly inaccurate. But sometimes, Rob, what do you think is the latest mock draft that's out there right now? Do you think there's like a 2019 mock draft?
The one I've seen recently was a 2017 one, and I think that's about as Walter Football. They seem to do mock drafts well in advance. So I think I've seen a 2017 one. I think that's about as far as it goes. I have seen a couple of articles talking about who may be the next, you know, for example, Jameis Winston, who in a few years' time and stuff like that. They're just entering the league now, college football now, as freshmen who may have the opportunity. So, yeah, you know, a lot of mock drafts out there. I just think this is going to be a great opportunity, Kenny, because what generally happens is we get to January, February, or whenever the Seahawks season finishes, and then we start, a lot more people get interested in the draft all of a sudden. I think this podcast will give us a chance to talk about a lot of different people, familiarize fans with guys who might be on the Seahawks radar, and just have a bit of fun with it. And hopefully we can also relate back to certain podcasts when we talked about certain players as well, which will make things a little bit easier. And, you know, it's very hard to cover a lot of different prospects during the season. As I write the blogs, you know, I may watch five or six games in a weekend or over Monday, Tuesday after a weekend, and it's hard to sort of write about everybody. And being able to do a quick podcast and review lots of different people and different players will give us a chance to cover a lot of different bases.
Yeah, I think that's why we wanted to get more into podcasting as well, too. Exactly that point is, as a writer, you're kind of handcuffed to how quickly you can write. And with the amount of, you know, editors on the internet these days, if you're trying to do it fast, it's definitely hard to make it sound good enough to be published. But, if you can, with podcasts, you can just break through 10, 15 guys in a matter of minutes. And so it's just, I think it's going to be a great resource. So I'm excited for you guys to do this.
Yeah. And I think, just sort of seeing the process of how these players and these prospects go up and down during a season, you know, some of those guys, and then you can't even sometimes tell, and they'll come off a season at the top. And then by the time the draft gets here, they're in the fourth round, like a Matt Barkley, and it'll be interesting to see what happens and tracking that process in an audio format and talking it out, because really I'm the guy that I think is going to be the ignorant person in this situation. I don't know a lot about college football. I don't know a lot about the players that are playing college football right now. I wait until they get some of that draft buzz, and then I'll start to understand some of these guys and who they are. But, you know, I'll be the guy that's asking Rob the questions that gets, you know, I'll try to represent the average listener, and then Rob, you'll have to play the part of expert if you're comfortable with that.
I will try and live up to that lofty expectation.
Let's talk about some of the guys that we talked about extensively in the commentary and in your appearances on Real and the Field Goals. And I want to start off with the first pick, obviously, Frank Clark. He fell to 63rd overall because of off-field issues, and when he was drafted, that was all of the, you know, the Seattle Times and Danny O'Neill, and a lot of these stories focused on his off-field thing, and the amount of research the Seahawks did, and would this crumble the franchise and the front office and everything like that, and the integrity of Pete Carroll? And two games into the season, all we're talking about is, wow, this guy is good. Then, you know, right now, as we've actually seen him play football, and I was wondering back then, would we start to just focus on Frank Clark the player? And I think most people have focused on Frank Clark the player, a guy that you compared quite highly to Jadeveon Clowney in many physical aspects at the time he was drafted. So seeing Frank Clark, is there any surprise on your side about how sort of dominant he's been in these first two preseason games?
Nobody should be surprised by this, because if you look at him, first of all, if you looked at the tape and then if you looked at his measurables, then he should have been a first-round pick. If there wasn't any of the issues off the field, then he would have gone in the first round. He compared incredibly favorably to the first pass rusher taken in the whole draft, which was Dante Fowler, who sadly got the knee injury at Jacksonville. He went third overall. So when you actually compare them in terms of size, Fowler's got 10 pounds lighter and ran a 4.60 at the combine. So Clark's got 10 pounds more bulk on his frame, and he ran a 4.64. So there's 0.04 seconds difference in terms of speed between Clark and Fowler. Clark's vertical was 6 inches better than Fowler's. His broad jump was 6 inches better. He had a superior three cone, a superior short shuttle, and a superior 60-yard shuttle. Everything about Clark physically beat Dante Fowler. And then you could say, well, look at the tape, and Fowler does, you know, he's a better player. But the tape didn't show that. When you actually looked at Frank Clark playing for Michigan, he was dominant. I mean, he was incredible. And then you throw other things in, like his 10-yard split, 1.58, which is elite. Pro Football Focus ranked Clark as the third most productive pass rusher in college football last season and the sixth best versus the run, and he didn't play anywhere near the number of games that, for example, Dante Fowler played in, and he still ranks as the third most productive pass rusher in college football last year. So it should surprise absolutely nobody. The talent was there, the physical qualities were there, everything was there for Frank Clark to be a top 15 pick. He fell for obvious reasons, and we've discussed that a lot. The Seahawks have basically got a first-round prospect at the end of round two, and if he stays healthy and stays out of trouble, it's going to be one of the best picks of the Carroll and Schneider regime.
Yeah, I think the crazy thing about Frank Clark to me that people maybe don't understand is that he might be a better run defender than he's a pass rusher, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because he could potentially play three downs for the Seahawks in much the same way that Michael Bennett does in terms of, you know, playing on the end, on base downs, being a really strong run stuffer, and then moving inside and kind of dominating guards during the on third downs and in passing situations. So it's definitely an interesting thing. Did we see much from Frank in terms of the second game? I know the first game he was definitely the player of the game, got my game ball for sure. What did we see from him in the second game?
Well, he wasn't supposed to play in the second game, and it was a bit of a surprise. I personally only realized he was playing when he tipped a pass.
Yeah.
And Kurt Menefee was calling the game, oh, that's Frank Clark who's tipped that pass, and nobody really knew that he was going to be playing in the game, and then he went off, and I don't think we saw him again. So that was basically it. And it's funny that even, I don't know how many snaps he played, let's say he played maybe 6 to 10 snaps, even then, he found a way to have an impact on the game. So he's an incredibly exciting player.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, his run defense, you know, I know that the stats in the preseason do not hold a lot of water, but I know that for Pro Football Focus, they do have him as the best run defender in the 4-3 defensive end so far in the preseason, and he's gotten a lot of snaps thus far. So he has played well, and you know, even though he's playing against some backups, he is dominating them. So it does make it sort of feel like a major leaguer playing against some minor leaguers and dominating the competition, which gives some hope. But I also want to ask, you know, and then if they are the number one run defense, there's a good chance that they're going to be, you know, right up there at the top of pass defense, because they're just forcing teams to throw into that secondary, which hopefully will be healthy and paid well, as well as they want to be, and have them all back there. But you know, you sort of, on CX Draft Blog recently, you sort of hit on something that I was actually starting to write about today, and I'll probably still write about it, but you basically saying that this opportunity with Richard Sherman out and Earl Thomas out and Cam Chancellor holding out, it sort of gives people a chance to focus on this defensive line, which I think has an opportunity. With you've got the best secondary in the NFL, and I'm starting to wonder if they have the best defensive line in the NFL and how they can play if Marsh and Clark are healthy and Jordan Hill is healthy and if Brandon Mebane, you know, is healthy and he's for some reason become a cap casualty. I mean, and then you've got a guy like Cliff Averill, and you, as you've said, Michael Bennett was the best player on the field. Speak on the defensive line and just how good they could be if all those players come together.
Well, it's good because I think there has been a minor shift just because of the injuries and the issues there. And when Earl Thomas is back and hopefully Cam Chancellor, although that situation doesn't seem to be changing very quickly, and then Richard Sherman out there, you're going to have a great secondary. But there's just something about this front, defensive front, that I don't think we've seen under Carroll so far, which is that it's loaded across the line. In the past, it was always Chris Clemons who was relied upon for pressure. I guess then Michael Bennett came in. I think it's fair to say that 2013, the regular season, we didn't really see the best of Cliff Averill, and he really came to his own in the postseason. But hopefully he and Bennett, and Bennett is just playing like one of the elite defensive linemen in the game at the moment. It kind of, towards the back end of last year, he took on that kind of form, and it's just carrying on, and he's pretty much unblockable at the moment. So you've got him and Averill, then you've got Clark coming into it. I was a big fan of Cassius Marsh, and he's got a chance there to add into the rotation. Atiba Rubin just looks great alongside Brandon Mebane, and Carroll saying things like, this is the best shape that Mebane's been in. Seeing him move around in that Kansas City game kind of validated that. And then you've got all the support from, you know, it's just the front seven as well, not so much the defensive line. When you've got Wagner and KJ Wright look fantastic against Kansas City, I'm not too sure that adding weight was the best thing for Bruce Irvin, but he's going to be there as well, and it's a big year for him as a contract year, so whether the weight hampers him or not, he's going to want to make an impression. There's a great chance for the first time ever for Seattle to be about maybe just that front seven as opposed to the secondary, and if that is going to be true, then it's pretty hard to see how teams are going to combat against this defense this year.
Prior to the draft, we talked about getting the Seahawks a punt returner or a kick returner, just adding to the return game. And I know that we talked a lot about Ty Montgomery out of Stanford. And I think we had pretty much decided as a group that there was almost a guarantee they were going to pick that guy. It didn't turn out to be him. It turned out to be Tyler Lockett, who they used three picks to move up to go grab him. I mean, obviously, you know, there's a lot of excitement around him right now. What have you seen from Tyler Lockett that might translate to the regular season so far?
Well, when we were watching Ty Montgomery and Tyler Lockett and looking at the guys who were categorized as receivers and return guys, one of the things with Tyler Lockett that stood out was that he was a good returner, but he also benefited from good blocking. So if you could get the blocking right, he was the kind of guy who could exploit that. I think that Ty Montgomery is a bit more of a natural, you know, he's shifty in the open field. I think he's got that same knack that Cordarrelle Patterson has, that even if things aren't blocked perfectly for him, he still finds a way to make a play. It's a little bit sort of intuitive for him. Whereas for Lockett, if you give him a crease or a seam, he's got, and he can attack that, and he can get in there, and he can make the big gains. So it's going to be two things for Seattle. The blocking on special teams for punt kick returns has to be a lot better. It was not good enough last year. The injuries to certain players hit their ability to play their star guys on special teams. That hurt them, and it hurt the return game in general. So they're going to need some better blocking there. But Lockett is that opportunistic guy. A bit like, it's a very obvious thing to say, but like Leon Washington, not necessarily that Percy Harvin-style explosive return guy who is just on a different level, not Cordarrelle Patterson, but if he gets a good block, if he gets that little opening there, he's got the speed and the athleticism to really make it count.
Moving on the offensive line, if it seems as though in this upcoming third preseason game against the Chargers, if the ones have a solid game, this will be the offensive line for the starting season, which is Russell Okung, Justin Britt at left guard, Drew Nowak at center, J.R. Sweezy at right guard, and then Gary Gilliam at right tackle. Obviously, the three big surprises there compared to where we were a few weeks ago. And absent from that will be probably Terry Poole, Mark Lewinsky, Christian Sicoli. What are your thoughts so far on the offensive line progress? Any I mean, it looks like Justin Britt has a chance to be a really good left guard, maybe, in the or at least in the way that James Carpenter is. And which of these offensive linemen that was drafted has been perhaps most disappointing?
I think it's an area of real concern, and the fact that they were even entertaining the possibility of Evan Mathis, and I know that the team played better at Kansas City, and maybe that reassured them a little bit more, so they didn't have to make any big moves to get Mathis in. But at the same time, with two games left in the preseason, we're still kind of wondering how this is all going to work out. We're disappointed as observers that Evan Mathis is now signed for Denver. Samson Satili's coming. We don't know if any, they've looked at any other people. They're clearly not entirely comfortable even now with the way that the line's shaping up. Gary Gilliam did well against Kansas City, but you know, he's going to take on the St. Louis Rams in week one. How's he going to get on against their elite defensive line? You know, he's a big, still a big, big question mark. It might work out for him, but we're kind of just hoping right now. In terms of Justin Britt, he's got the skill set to work inside. It's going to take a lot of pressure off him not working the edge, because that is his big issue against speed. You know, every defensive end who comes into the league now has got a great speed rush, and he struggled with that immensely. So get him inside, stick him between the center and the left tackle, and it'll take some pressure off him. Let's just utilize the skills that he's got. I think center has to be a concern. Why else have they got Satili in? Were they really going to consider putting Mathis at center or even Justin Britt there? Then they seem to want Drew Nowak to win the job because of his bigger upside, and yet I just get the sense that he's not completely convinced them, and I'm not sure that's necessarily with his play. You know, it is a tough position to learn, to make all the line calls, and maybe there's a slight issue there, which means that maybe they turn to someone like Lemuel Jean-Pierre if they don't bring anybody else in, because he's a safe pair of hands. As for who has been a bust, well, you have to be a little bit concerned from a draft point of view that they've now drafted James Carpenter and Justin Britt with a first and a second round picks respectively, and neither of them has been able to hold down the right tackle position. I'm not sure if this will switch the way that they approach that position in the future. Hopefully Gary Gilliam nails it, but they've not had any success at all trying to select right tackles for this game.
And the right tackle position is kind of a big deal in the Seahawks scheme, isn't it, in terms of the run game? Because when you're running right, if a guy, because they play all the outside zone type runs, and if you're running to the right and you get blown up on the right side, like that definitely changes the whole complexion of the run play. So I think that right tackle position is pretty a big deal. And speaking of Gary Gilliam, did you like what you saw from him in terms of these past two games? You know, he's potentially going to be the right starter at right tackle this year. So that's kind of one of those things that, you know, they're going to have to figure it out pretty soon. Do you think he's got what it takes to be the starter for the whole year?
There's two things there. First of all, I thought that he played well against Kansas City. I think you highlighted, Danny, whether it was on Twitter or on Field Goals, that there was one play very similar to the issue that Justin Britt had against Von Miller, and an almost carbon copy play. Wilson managed to escape and dump it off to Christian Michael, who dropped the ball. Apart from that, Gilliam didn't have any real major concerning plays in pass protection against a really, really good pass rushing team. So that's encouraging. San Diego, I saw them against Arizona in preseason as well. I watched that game, and they are looking good in terms of pass rush. So this is another really good test for Gary Gilliam to see how he gets on in this one. The right tackle position is even more important than it ever has been. And when I started writing the blog in 2007, 2008, and we were talking about right tackles, it was kind of a position that you ignored. You drafted that guy late on, a veteran free agent started there. But as defensive lines have got more and more athletic, it's become more and more important. And that's why a team like Washington, for example, takes Brandon Scherff, fifth overall, even though they've got one of the best left tackles in the league. They need two athletic tackles to work for that scheme. And the problem that Seattle's got is I think that they also feel that they need great athleticism, almost another left tackle playing right tackle to combat the speed, particularly in the NFC West, particularly against teams like the Rams. They need that, and they can't get it because they never draft early enough in the draft to take another really good left tackle who is athletic to go and man that spot. They're always kind of picking at the scraps at the end of the first or the second round, and that has been part of the issue that they've had.
I think that one question a lot of Seahawks fans would be wondering from a scouting standpoint would be the secondary, how they've performed in the absence of all of their stars. So how do you think Kerry Williams has performed and in his replacement of Byron Maxwell? And what do you think of the safeties back there that have been playing without Chancellor and Thomas?
I like the way Deion Bailey approached the Kansas City game. He kind of the way that he was hitting, I think, impressed. And he looked like he was making a statement there. Look, I'm not going to be Cam Chancellor, but I can be physical. And if you need me for one game, two games, 10 games in the regular season, I'm going to try and step up to the plate. And I thought he was quite pleasing. I think people like Terrell are just, you know, you just want to see old Thomas back there. I think if Deion Bailey has to start a few games, then I don't think there's going to be any, that's not going to cost him a game, for example. I don't think it's going to cost him a game. As for people like Kerry Williams, I think he's, Seahawks fans have maybe looked for him to be a bit of a scapegoat just because he's been brought in to replace Brandon Browner, Byron Maxwell, very popular players. He had one miscommunication with a teammate, which led to a big play in the Kansas City game, and people latched onto that. There was a reason why he's been brought in, and there's no way that he can be cut this year because of the dead money on his salary. So he's going to be starting alongside Richard Sherman. He's clearly trying to learn the scheme. It's a little bit new for him, and he's trying to learn it on the hop. He's also not got Earl Thomas back there, and he's highlighted that and said, why do cornerbacks succeed in this scheme? It's because of Earl Thomas, essentially, and he's not been playing. I think when Thomas is back there, hopefully Cam Chancellor's back there, and Richard Sherman's across from the other side, we're going to see exactly the same situation that Byron Maxwell had, where people will target Kerry Williams. That'll do him the power of good because he's an opportunist, and he will take the chances that are thrown his way. He'll make some big plays. He'll give up some big plays. So did Byron Maxwell. So did Brandon Browner. I think that situation will work out.
You think fans resent the fact that he cost money as compared to those other guys? And do you think that Ty Smith is playing better than him right now?
I don't think that Ty Smith, I like what I've seen from Ty Smith, but I think that they see him as a guy maybe for next year or the year after when maybe Williams, I think we're probably going to get 2 years of Williams unless he performs particularly badly in 2015. I think there may be a little bit of that. I think one of the things that bothers fans is that he had such a bad year in Philadelphia and that they've replaced him, funnily enough, with Byron Maxwell at great cost. And when a player joins a team who's just come off a bad season, it's hard to get overly excited. But if there's one thing that Pete Carroll knows, it's cornerbacks and defensive backs. And they selected him to come in. They have paid him, as you mentioned there. They didn't just rely on the draft and getting another young guy to come in and take that role. They feel that he can be a bit of a stopgap for them for a year or two. I think the best thing to do is just put faith. They've never let you down before with cornerbacks, so just put the faith that this guy is going to hold his own. He'll give up a few plays, but I'm sure he's going to make a few plays as well.
The Seahawks made an interesting move today. Well, the last 2 days, in fact, or last couple days, I should say. They signed George Farmer, decided to convert him to a cornerback, and then they also signed Deontay Greenberry, undrafted free agent out of Houston, former five-star recruit. Both guys are former five-star recruits out of high school. What can you tell us about those two guys?
Farmer, he was an interesting guy to sort of follow, and in the limited sort of tape that we see, there was definitely something there, and it was a little bit surprising that he didn't generate a little bit more interest when it came to draft time. And if they feel that he can come in and be a cornerback, they're obviously trying to emulate, and there is something to this. Well, Richard Sherman played receiver in college before converting. I think they've tried to convert other players, you know, Alan Bailey being a good example. They like to sort of look at this. Here's the frame. It matches up everything that we want in a cornerback. It's going to be harder to find these guys in the draft because everybody's looking for the Seahawks-style cornerbacks now. So he's one to really sort of keep an eye on. In terms of Deontay Greenberry, you know, a player that has come from a scheme that was very much, you know, high octane, very difficult to judge him as a receiver in that type of system. But he's, what, 6'3", 200 pounds, has got the length as well. So again, I mean, it's hard to sort of invest too much faith in these guys working out. But why not have a look? And if they can show any kind of ability, maybe you can get them on a practice squad, you can continue to train them up, maybe they come into a camp next year and have a battle for it. I think if there was to be any chance of it working out any sooner than that, they would have obviously had to work on this a lot earlier. So they're kind of looking ahead, planning for the future, and just not leaving any stone unturned, really.
Do you have any – I know there hasn't been a lot to see from him in the preseason, but do you have any thoughts on Eric Pinkins and his transition to outside linebacker?
I do. I just wondered whether or not during this whole Cam Chancellor thing, whether they might look at moving him back to safety, funnily enough, because he is someone with a bit of size and that athleticism, and I wondered whether they would look to do that again. They haven't. They've kept him at linebacker. It's going to be difficult for him, isn't it? Because they I can't see them losing Mike Morgan. It's just been a real solid guy for Pete Carroll for a long, long time now, and people like Kevin Pierre-Lewis obviously playing really well. So how he sort of figures into that, I'm not too sure, but I would hope that he's going to get further opportunities. Last year was a bit of a waste for him with the injuries and stuff, wasn't it? So I think he's probably he may be a candidate for the practice squad.
Recently, two guys, Deion Bailey and Ronald Martin, have made some waves in pressers by Pete Carroll, and I think Ronald Martin made a couple of plays against Kansas City. Did you scout him very much coming out of LSU? I know he kind of flew under the radar, went undrafted. Do you know the story behind him? Why he went undrafted?
No, I don't. I mean, it's surprising that someone from LSU, especially in that position, would fly under the radar as much as he had. But no, right. Not somebody I had a chance to focus on.
What about T.Y. McGill? Was he on your radar at all before the draft? And if not, since then, what have you thought of his play?
I really liked him in the first game. I mean, he just stood out a little bit. I really like him, but I've got to say, having had the opportunity, we have great access to all of the preseason games over here from all of the other teams as well. And having watched a couple of games, there is a defensive tackle who is playing for the Cincinnati Bengals, and they're going to really struggle to get him on the practice squad. And his name is just, I'm just trying to find the name now. There is a player who in two of the Bengals games that I've seen has really, really stood out. And I just wondered if they do end up cutting him because of their depth on the defensive line, if they just can't fit him in, if he's just a bit too similar to the position that Geno Atkins plays and some of the other guys they've got there. I wondered if they could potentially look at this guy. I'm trying to find the guy's name for you, but he really, really impressed. If you give me maybe a minute, I might be able to find it.
The Seahawks actually have some history of trading with the Bengals. Obviously, they traded, Kelly Jennings for Clint McDonald back in the day, if you guys remember that. Obviously, Clint McDonald turned into a really good player for the Seahawks after kind of hanging out on their practice squad and on their roster for a little while, but...
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if they've ever lost any trades. I mean, trade for Percy Harvin, I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson has played terribly for the Vikings, so I don't know necessarily if it just depends on how you classify a win or a loss, but it seems like if you look at McDonald for Jennings, I mean, that's an absolute steal. And it seems like most of their trades, you know, are Marshawn Lynch for like a fourth and a sixth.
Yeah, that was a huge one, actually, obviously. And I'm trying to think of some of the other trades they've made, but... They haven't made a lot of the, you know, the big ticket trades other than the Jimmy Graham and the Percy Harvin. I think obviously the Jimmy Graham one.
Gerald Tapp for Chris Clemens, wasn't that a deal?
That was a good trade too. Good recall on that one.
Yeah.
The guy who has really impressed with Cincinnati is Deshaun Williams.
Oh, okay.
And he has been really, really good. And I did a bit of study on him, having watched the two games. The latest one against Tampa Bay was the last game. And the feeling with the Bengals, or at least with some of their fans, is that they'd like to sneak him onto their practice squad. But the way that he's played, that is going to be really difficult to do. And whether it's the Seahawks or somebody else, if he does end up not making the 53-man roster for Cincy, I think that he's somebody that a lot of teams are going to look at.
They got a lot of depth there. Yeah, you're right. Because they got Domatopeko, Geno Atkins, Brandon Thompson, a third rounder from 2012. They got Pat Sims, Cormac Gethers, Devin Still. They drafted Marcus Hardison, who was on some of our radars last year. I don't know how many defensive tackles teams typically keep on their 53, but it's usually three or four or five or somewhere around there. So he's on the outside looking in.
Yeah, speaking of final cuts, maybe let's just wrap this up with maybe perhaps one more question of, you know, looking at the back end of this roster, Rob, how about naming a couple guys that you think might be surprises to make it and maybe some of those last final cuts that'll be the toughest ones to perhaps see go?
I think it's pretty predictable. I've never really believed that the running backs were going to challenge Christian Michael. I don't think that the Seahawks are just going to give up on him because of his extreme athletic quality. So I don't really see any chance of Thomas Rawls or Rod Smith usurping him. Maybe they take an extra running back, but I'm not sure. There's going to be some difficult decisions to make at receiver, isn't there? You know, is Kevin Norwood going to make the cut? Maybe he will if they have to put on the pup list. Paul Richardson. Apart from that, I think the biggest battle really is probably going to be maybe the tight end. Is Anthony McCoy going to make it? Hasn't had a great time in the preseason games, has he? You'd like to see him make an impact. I just think that the Pete Carroll connection, they obviously like Anthony McCoy, might see him through as opposed to someone like Rashawn Allen maybe, or even Cooper Helfert, but that's going to be a nice little battle there. And then there's this just long army of defensive backs who are all battling for it. And I think it's going to be fairly predictable. Kerry Williams is going to start. I think they're going to keep hold of Will Blackman. I think they're going to keep hold of the likes of Smith, who we've talked about there, and some of the others. It may be difficult for guys like Mohamed Cisse to actually make it, given that they've not had much chance to impress. So I think it's pretty straightforward for Seattle. I don't think we're going to see many, many big shocks.
There you have it. I want to thank Rob for coming on. And again, the new podcast is 3000 NFL Mock Draft. You know, that's a team partnership between Field Goals and Seahawks Draft Blog. That'll be coming out, I believe, on Tuesdays this season. We'll record on Mondays and then drop them on Tuesdays. And that'll be something you can look forward to hearing about college players and their relation to the upcoming 2016 NFL Draft. So, you know, we'll try to get some guests. I know we've had Phil Savage on this podcast, and he runs the Senior Bowl. So we'll see if we can get Phil Savage, and then as the leading up to the draft, maybe for some of these prospects. But it should be a good show, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a great show, and I'm sure that it's going to be we can get some good guests on there. I've had a chance to speak to some of the players before, and it's good to sort of get their take on how their season's going and sort of get to know these guys. It's going to be really good for fans to sort of be across all of the players that Seattle might be looking at, and we can bring some different guys to the table. And I think it's going to be a really good draft next year, so it's going to be really interesting to follow right from September all the way through.
Yeah, and you can follow Rob at Rob Staten. If you live in Sheffield, England, you can listen to him on BBC.
Every night, between 6 and 7.
Every night between 6 and 7, have you ever, how often when you're in Sheffield do you see someone wearing Seahawks gear?
Oh, do you know what? Actually, about a year ago, I looked out the window of my house and a guy was walking down the street in a Russell Wilson jersey. And when I first started following the Seahawks and then came back to the UK when I was living in Vancouver, there was barely any Seahawks fans in the UK at all. And now, like you will see, I was in the big shopping mall in Sheffield not long ago, and a guy was wearing a Seahawks cap. You see the odd jersey, you see T-shirts, and it's just because they are the best team in the NFL that there's a lot of people sort of getting on the bandwagon and buying the gear. Yeah. So you see a lot more of it around here now.
Success spreads. And, hey, if you the other good news, well, if there's one bright side to losing the Super Bowl is that your Super Bowl winning T-shirts get dispersed all over the world for all those people. So thanks again, Rob, for coming on the show. And everybody, follow him, go to Seahawks Draft Blog, and then come back to Real in the Field Goals as well.
Okay, so that was our interview with Rob. Make sure to check out 3000 NFL Mock Draft coming out on Tuesdays this year. And so that was that. Now let's go ahead and transition over to Danny and Jackson and I giving our picks for the entire season. We're going to pick every division winner, Super Bowl champion, and that's the three of us doing that for about an hour. So sit tight and listen to this.
Okay, so we've got Jackson Bevins on the line now, and we're going to talk about Jackson and I's upcoming show called Deep Balls, which is kind of an extension of Jackson's old NFL picks column, but we're going to start doing it in podcast form. As you may know, Jackson is a very accomplished picker when it comes to NFL games. He's got his system down, and I'm going to have him spout off some of his stats, but he's got a really good hit rate. It's going to help you guys in your office pools picking games, and should just be a lot of fun to kind of talk through every week and talk about matchups and things like that. So Jackson, how you doing, man? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I'm good, man. I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, so we're, you know, we talked to Rob Staton a little earlier about Kenny and him are going to be doing a college football podcast this year.
I am so looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And so we're, as I alluded to earlier, we're kind of expanding some of our coverage, and I'm really stoked to start doing the NFL Picks column or podcast.
Yeah, I'm excited to be doing it with you, man.
I'm excited to listen. How's that?
A lot of excitement here, getting real in the field goal.
So for today, I wanted to just kind of go through every division.
And when can people listen to Deep Balls?
Okay, so Deep Balls is going to be a Wednesday podcast. We're going to be recording on Wednesdays. We haven't ironed out exactly how long the cast is going to be. I think it's going to kind of – we'll have to feel it out organically and see how long it takes. But basically, we'll be running through the schedule and talking about games and giving our predictions. And so we catch that either on Wednesday nights or Thursday mornings before the Thursday night game hits. And, hopefully everyone enjoys it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go ahead for today. We kind of, instead of doing any picks, it's a little early for that. We wanted to just kind of run through some of the conferences, some of the divisions, talk about which teams we like the most. So Jackson, I'm just going to kind of start it with the AFC East, the defending champion Patriots, probably the favorites out of the AFC East. Obviously the Dolphins have added some offensive weapons. They've added Ndamukong Suh. The Jets revamped their defense. They're already strong defense, and obviously the Bills have a really strong defense as well. What are some of your thoughts on the AFC East?
Yeah, the East should be more interesting this year than it's been in the past. As everyone knows, the Patriots have had a stranglehold on that division for the last decade and a half, and I expect them to be the best team in the division again this year. I don't think they will be as good as last year. Missing Revis is going to affect them a lot. The difference between them 2 years ago and last year in pass defenses, fairly large, and I think Revis had a whole lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. Also, there's a chance they might lose a game or two early in the season that they wouldn't have otherwise lost if Brady's suspension is upheld. So there's that to consider as well. They're very, very thin at wide receiver to start the season with LaFell and Edelman and Amendola all dealing with injuries. I mean, to the point where they just signed Reggie Wayne. So the door has creaked open. I think Miami's probably the team best suited to walk through it, if anyone does, and that's because they're the only team that's got a quarterback of the other three. I think there's going to be three very good defenses between the Jets, Bills, and Dolphins. I think the Bills might have one of the two or three best defenses in the NFL. In fact, I would say Seattle's probably the only team with a better defense than the Bills. And with Rex Ryan, I do think that he is a good coach, but they don't know who their quarterback is. I mean, they might say they do, but they really don't seem to know. The Jets certainly don't know, which is a shame because I think that they're going to be – I think they got a lot better everywhere else in the offseason. But Miami's super interesting because I think Tannehill showed in the last half of last season that he's a capable NFL in the world. So when you get one, that's why you pay him. And they're helping him out. He's got a very good running back next to him in Lamar Miller. They drafted Jay Ajayi. And brought in LaMichael James behind him. So there's some talent there, and they definitely improved the receiving core. Jarvis Landry was very exciting rookie last year. They added Jordan Cameron if he can stay healthy. That's another big weapon there. And, there's a lot to like about what they can do. Obviously, Ndamukong Suh is going to change the nature of that defense that was already okay. I think he can make them a good defense. And so, I'm going to say I still think New England comes out of it because they've got the best quarterback and they've got the best system, but I think the Dolphins will push them and probably finish within a game.
I actually think that I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Bills win the division. I think that just that small window of opportunity with Brady being out for four games, assuming that he is,
I actually think, just like Jackson said, they have the second-best defense in the NFL, and I actually think Tyrod Taylor is going to win the job and be okay. I don't think he's going to be good, but I think he's going to be okay, and I think that because they have LeSean McCoy and Sammy Watkins, they have a couple of good options around to help him out. And I think, you know, it's not going to be, like, super pretty, but maybe, like, first-ish, like, maybe something similar to the Seahawks in 2012 in that first half of the season when Russell Wilson, you know, he wasn't great yet, and but they were still just barely getting it done. And then I think that as Taylor sort of figures it out a little bit more, they'll be able to win enough games at the end to win the division. I still think that Miami is not as great on defense, and I don't think the Jets are really very good at all. So I would say maybe Buffalo gets sneaks in at 10-6, or maybe the Patriots also get a 10-6 and there's a tiebreaker. But I think Buffalo makes the playoffs for the first time in this century.
do you guys think that Percy Harvin is going to have an impact, Jackson?
Oh, I think he'll definitely have an impact. You know, the issue with Percy Harvin, besides health, obviously, is finding ways to get him the ball that are productive. Seattle really struggled with that, but Minnesota didn't. You know, when he was – there's, you know, a real sour taste in a lot of Seahawks fans' minds and in a lot of our audience's minds about Percy Harvin, but this is a guy that was extraordinarily productive in a number of different ways in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You know, Seattle kind of had an offensive identity that they tried to shoehorn him into, and then when that didn't quite fit, they tried to adapt the identity to fit him, and it never really meshed. But in Buffalo, I see no reason why not. And, you know, if you've got a healthy Percy Harvin and a healthy LeSean McCoy, you're talking about two of the toughest people in the NFL to bring down in the open field. And you know, if they're able to scheme a way to get people into the open field the way that Chan Gailey did for C.J. Spiller 3 years back, you know, there's a chance for them to actually score a lot of points without ever having to chuck it down the field too much. So the potential is there. And Kenny, to your point, I mean, the Bills were number two in defensive DVOA last year, obviously behind the Seahawks, but they were also number four in special teams, whereas Miami, who I think is the other contender, they were dead last in special teams by DVOA, and you know, one thing, if you follow the Pete Carroll philosophy, you know how important special teams is, and I think teams are starting to realize that it really is a big impact on the game. So there's a lot of things set up that if Buffalo, who's 26th in offense last year, can even be league average, you know, they won 9 games having one of the worst offenses in the NFL last year. So there's a lot of potential for them to kind of make the leap and maybe win 11 games.
Danny, if we wrapped up the AFC East right now, what would you say? Do you want to be safe and go with Jackson and not take chances in life? Or you want to go out on a limb where I am, where the fruit is?
Jesus. I'm going to go ahead and stay safe on this one. I think the Patriots are going to win the division again. But I'm actually with you, Kenny, that the Bills will definitely be a contender there. I've thought for a while you always hear the expression one player away, one quarterback away. They're really a quarterback away from being a really good team, I think. Like you guys pointed out. Really
My thing with Tyrod Taylor and why I would like him, say, over Ryan Fitzpatrick is there is not really – I mean, I would be surprised if he's a great player, but at the same time, there is not really any reason for us to think that he couldn't be. He's just had 4 years in Baltimore. He has no chance to start, and maybe just like Russell Wilson – maybe he was just drafted too low or overlooked for too long and, you know, didn't get the opportunity like Wilson did. And maybe that was 4 years of backing up Flacco and working for John Harbaugh have turned him into, you know, a pretty good player. I think that he's been pretty decent in the preseason, and I think that, you know, they're not going to make him throw the ball 500 times. You know, if he starts, he's going to throw it 400 times, 350 times, and they're going to copy Seattle in a way. So I think that Rex Ryan is not the best coach and maybe was a little overrated in New York, but I think he can maybe – I think Buffalo is better than they were last year. And last year they were 9-7. I think New England's a little worse, so I just see that sort of evening itself out to Buffalo getting 10 wins and making the playoffs.
I think, you know, it's like – go ahead, Jackson.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, to your to your point about Buffalo being a quarterback away, truly, I think that they, if they had a top eight quarterback, they might be my pick to come out of the AFC.
Right.
But I just don't. It's so important to have a quarterback, and you know, you just don't make the playoffs without a decent quarterback. You just don't do it. And I'm going to reserve having them jump, you know, the most dominant team in the last 15 years until they show that they have a quarterback. And as far as playing it safe versus going out with Kenny, this podcast is going to be about making money and winning office pools, not trying to impress people with outlandish picks.
Exactly.
Of course. But, you know, at the same time, I don't want anyone to think that I'm not an expert. I am an expert.
All right, I don't think
anyone doubts your expertise.
Okay, good.
On that note, let's move to the AFC North. This is an interesting division pretty much every year.
Which team's playing that one?
That would be the Ravens, Steelers, Browns, and Bengals. You may remember last year that at one point, pretty late in the season, everyone was tied for first place. So this is a competitive, really tough division as usual. Yeah, let's just go right into it. Jackson, who's your favorite in that division?
Steelers.
Okay.
But I don't think it's because the Steelers are going to be really good. I think the Steelers are going to have one of, you know, the five or six worst defenses in the NFL. But they have by far the best offense. You know, I don't know that a team constructed that way can win the Super Bowl, but a team constructed that way can win a division. And
the Colts.
They had the third worst defense in the NFL last year and won 11 games. And I think that there's no reason to think their offense will be any worse this year. So
is that by
they were number two offense in the NFL by DVOA last year.
Okay, and then third worst in DVOA offense?
In defense, third worst in defense, third second defense. Best in offense.
Wow.
But like I said, I mean they won 11 games and the division doing that last year. So
yeah.
I think that Roethlisberger to Antonio Brown is the single most efficient quarterback wide receiver combination in the NFL. Le'Veon is definitely searching for a post Polamalu defensive identity, but there's no reason to think that they can't win 10-11 games again. But the team that'll push them will be Baltimore.
Yeah. Kenny, what do you think of that? What do you think of the AFC North?
I do think that the offense will be a little worse, and I'm a little concerned that two players have been now suspended for the start of the season with Martavis Bryant and Le'Veon Bell. You know, Bell being out two games, Bryant looking to serve a four-game suspension. I think that
they're also out without Marquise Pouncey.
Yeah, no Pouncey. So, and you know, Ben Roethlisberger is a fragile guy. So, I think that I would be concerned that their offense is a little bit worse, and that their defense is not a little bit better. There's just some things going on in Pittsburgh that make me concerned and shy away from picking them, and I would probably go with Baltimore. But I'll be rooting for Cleveland, so.
Yeah, Baltimore is an interesting team. I'm trying to look at them this year roster-wise versus last year, and I don't know where they got better. I mean, Pittsburgh would have, in my mind, Pittsburgh would have to get worse by a bit for Baltimore to jump them. Kenny, do you think, or Danny, do you think Baltimore's gotten better?
Well, that's a good question. I'm looking at their roster right now, and I'm trying to figure out. I mean, they drafted Rashad Perryman, but they lost Torrey Smith.
I think they were a little jilted last season with the Ray Rice stuff. They weren't expecting it. It came. Right. They had to change their whole offense. So I think that just by way of going a whole offseason knowing that what their situation is, not knowing that one of their star players was going to be out for the whole year. Just the fact that they know some more about the team that's going to be out there, I think just that alone will make their offense a little bit better. As far as personnel, I guess Danny can list it out, but I don't even really know who they added.
Well, I'm trying to look through their roster here, and I'm not seeing anything like major. I mean, obviously
they traded Elody Nada.
Right. So, I mean, that's definitely one concern. Yeah, it's such a tough division just because there was so much parity last year. I mean, even the Browns were really in it till the end, and then obviously we haven't even mentioned the Bengals, who, you know, seem to contend every year. And obviously there's the whole Andy Dalton playoffs thing, and that's kind of probably going to be, you know, a narrative again this year. But yeah, I'm with Jackson on the Steelers. I actually I think they could contend for the whole AFC crown this year.
I actually think that overall, though, the division is I thought it was pretty overrated last year. I mean, you look at the fact that they dominated the NFC South, so they all won all those games, and then they were close. So what? You know, like, even sending three teams to the playoffs, I felt like, yeah, because you played, like, the worst divisions. And
the AFC was down. The AFC was not a good conference last year. It was the most top-heavy I can remember a conference being.
They sent three teams to the playoffs. None of them made it to the AFC Championship game. I don't even know. I know the Bengals lost in the first round. You know, I just think that it's a little bit of a mirage, so I'm not exactly sure. I'm not sure yet if I think that the Steelers are legitimate contenders, but they might be.
Fair enough. Moving on to the AFC South. This was one of the worst divisions in football last year, obviously, with the NFC South. But the Titans, Jaguars, Colts, and Texans. The Titans picked up a new quarterback in Marcus Mariota. The Jaguars, you know, the Gus Bradley plan's in action. It seems like they've picked up some weapons there. You know, you like kind of some of the things they've done, but they haven't really put anything together at this point. The Colts are the Colts. They've got Andrew Luck. They picked up Frank Gore, Andre Johnson this offseason. You know, added some guys in the draft, Philip Dorsett. And then obviously you have the Texans, J.J. Watt, great defense, questionable offense with, you know, again, it's the quarterback question. So, Jackson, out of the AFC South, I mean, I'm guessing you're going to go with the Colts, but what are some of your thoughts on the AFC South?
Yeah, you know, the AFC South is just kind of easy pickings right now. I do think compete with a healthy Arian Foster and a healthy Jadeveon Clowney added to that mix. We don't know what that team looks like yet, but we are still talking about a consensus top 10 defense with some legitimate playmakers on offense. I mean, they've still got a very good offensive line. A healthy Arian Foster is still very, very dangerous. And, you know, Nuke Hopkins is going to get a chance to prove that he's the number one receiver in the NFL this year. And I see no reason to think that he's not. The question is going to be about getting him the ball, obviously. But I think Brian Hoyer is kind of in a position for that quarterback job. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah,
he got named on Hard Knocks. But, you know, yeah, Brian Hoyer, okay, he's just seems like kind of a placeholder quarterback. But, I mean, he was as effective in Cleveland as anyone's been in I don't know how long.
At one point, he ended terribly. Like, over his last seven games, he had 2 touchdowns, 9 interceptions.
Totally, yeah. But, I mean, that was, like, stripped of Gordon and Cameron. You know, like, I mean, he literally had nobody to throw to at the end. I don't know, you know, how many quarterbacks put up much better numbers, but I do hear your point. But the Texans are the only team that I see pushing the Colts. And the Colts are in a position where they've been good enough to win their division with Andrew Luck, but have some obvious shortcomings when it comes to winning playoff football. And as evidenced by losing, you know, by more than 5 touchdowns in the AFC Championship game, that's where you get when you have a young quarterback where you push chips to the middle of the table, and they did that by bringing in those players Danny mentioned. I mean, they are positioning themselves to compete for the AFC title, not just for the division title. And, you know, I feel bad starting off these predictions with 3 straight incumbents, but you know, in these 3 divisions, I really do see last year's champion repeating, and that would mean the Colts.
Kenny? Did we lose Kenny? All right, well, we'll just go ahead and continue on, Jackson. Going in, what's that?
You have the Colts winning the division?
I do, yeah. I think, you know, like you said, the Texans could give them a run for their money. Last year they did, in fact, kind of late into the year, you know, push for the playoffs a little bit. But Again, it's the quarterback question. I don't really know if, you know, is Brian Hoyer more than just a Jag? And that'll be a question that we'll, you know, get answered this year when he has a little bit more a few more weapons to throw to this year, and I think that'll tell us a little bit more about him. And but yeah, I'm picking the Colts for that division for sure. And then I think you know, when it comes to the Jaguars, I think they could be better this year. I think they could maybe win, you know, 6 or 7 games or something like that. But I don't see them pushing for the playoffs at this point. So yeah, I'm going with the Colts in the South. So moving to the AFC West, this is an interesting division to me. I think that I just got a text from Kenny. He said his computer restarted, so he'll be back with us in a minute here. So the AFC West, interesting division. The Broncos, Chargers, and Chiefs, I think all, you know, have some of the talent to contend in the division. They all have, the Broncos and Chargers have really good quarterbacks, in my opinion. I think the Chiefs have a good quarterback, Alex Smith, a guy that can they can win with, but it's not necessarily going to win them games. I'm kind of a big Phillip Rivers fan, so I think the Chargers have a shot. But yeah, that's an interesting division. Obviously, a lot depends on kind of what you get from Peyton Manning. What are you thinking of the AFC West?
I think it's the Chiefs' division to lose this year. Denver has been very good, as we know. You know, over the last since they got Peyton Manning, they're consistently one of the 3-4 best teams in the NFL. But we saw some real disturbances in the force with Manning down the stretch last year.
Yeah.
And I, you know, some say it was because he had a quad injury and couldn't step into his throws, and I'm sure there's some of that. But in December in the NFL, everybody is banged up. And for Peyton Manning, who has been losing velocity on his throws over the last few years, being unable to step into it, you know, the arm strength isn't there to accommodate that anymore. And, you know, it's getting harder and harder for him to connect on deep passes. The good news for him is he's got some insanely talented wide receivers in Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders to throw to.
Yeah.
And that gives you a large margin of error. But they lost Julius Thomas, who is a total weapon as that flex tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, defensively, they got a year older. I don't know that they got better anywhere. So I think the window is open there. I can see them losing 2 or 3 games this year that they wouldn't have lost last year or the year before. And I think the Chiefs did get better. I mean,
they
had zero wide receiver production last year. I mean, wide receivers didn't catch a touchdown. Their yards per target was super low.
Yeah.
And that everyone is so quick to put that on Alex Smith, but I mean, who is he supposed to throw to? You know, he's got Dexter McCluster and Dwayne Bowe, who looked every bit washed up. And
right.
Who else is he throwing to? Little guys. He's got Travis Kelce, and they started to develop a really nice rapport towards the back half of the season. No reason to think that doesn't continue this year.
Right.
But they added Jeremy Maclin. And this is an offense that, with no wide receiver production, was still 12th best in the NFL last year. Their defense seems every bit as good. Eric Berry back healthy. Justin Houston, obviously. Ton of talent on that team. And, you know, in addition to that, they were number 3 in special teams DVOA last year, which, you know, is kind of the swing vote for a lot of teams. And we saw it last year when the Seahawks went to Arrowhead. They are a stingy team that can run. I mean, they ran the ball on Seattle as well as any team has in the last 3 years. So, I think that they could win 11, 12 games this year.
Wow, okay, so we got our first kind of upset here, I think. You said you're picking the Chiefs in that division, didn't you?
Yeah, I do, and I like the Chargers. And I think the Chargers will probably start hot with like a 6-2 first half, as they're wont to do, but I don't see that anything has changed in the composition of that team to make me believe that all of a sudden they're going to be, you know, good in December when they never have been.
Yeah, well said.
Well, I cut out in the middle of the AFC South. I'll just say that I'm picking the Colts. I assume everyone else is.
That's correct.
I do think the Texans. I think Brian Hoyer is a bad quarterback. I think Ryan Mallett will be the quarterback, and he won't be much better
by like week four. So just not so sure about the Texans as a wild card, but I do like them in theory. And then for the AFC West, I appreciate what Jackson's going for with the Chiefs. I don't necessarily want to disagree. I guess I would just hang my horse, as it were, to just more of Peyton Manning and Von Miller. That's kind of what I'll just stay safe in this one. I guess the Chargers are kind of interesting. You know, Melvin Gordon could be a nice addition, and I do think Philip Rivers is underrated, as a lot of people are down on him, and the defense might be better this year. But I'll stick with Denver.
Yeah, and this one's tough for me, I think, honestly, because I definitely agree with a lot of the things that Jackson said about the Chiefs. I think their defense is the best probably in that division, and they added some weapons. They got some good stuff going on offense. But I still like the Broncos in the West, and that's kind of projecting a little bit that Peyton will bounce back a little bit. So I mean, that's a really tough one, because I think the Broncos go as Peyton goes, and if his arm is what it was in the second half of last year, then I don't see them being the powerhouse that they've been. But if it really was an injury, if it really was like fighting through whatever it was that they say contributed to that, then I think they could really bounce back. I like their defense a lot. I think they got some really good pass rushing weapons on that team, and I think that's huge as you guys know with the Seahawks. And so yeah,
what were you gonna say? Honestly, Denver's and one thing that so few people bring up when talking about the Broncos, they might have the most underrated defensive player in the league in Chris Harris Jr.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point.
That guy is has like a legit claim to being the best cornerback in the NFL, and he's another one of those guys that's totally unheralded coming out of college. And
he was undrafted, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he's amazing. He's as sticky as they get, and that does a lot. I mean, we saw how good they could be when Champ Bailey was playing really well at corner, and the ability to, what that does to free up the rest of the athletes on that defense. Chris Harris is playing like peak Champ Bailey. So, I hear so many people talk about the Broncos, and he never gets mentioned, and I just wanted to mention him because I think he's awesome.
And he's listening right now, so he appreciates that. Let's just go ahead. I think we've gotten through the AFC, and I would just say that my six playoff teams would be the division winners: Buffalo, Baltimore, Indianapolis, and Denver. And my two wild cards: New England and Kansas City.
That's fair to me. Yeah.
What do you think about the wild cards?
My wild card teams probably be. I do have the Broncos still getting in, and it's a tough one between the Ravens and the Dolphins for me. But I'm gonna go with Miami. So I've got your four division winners being Patriots, Steelers, Colts, and Chiefs, and then I've got Denver and Miami getting in the wild card spots.
Man, this is tough. I'm gonna go with obviously I pick the Patriots, Steelers, Colts, and Broncos. I'm gonna go ahead and pick the Ravens and Chargers as the wild card teams.
Interesting. I like that we...
Sorry, not the Chargers, the Chiefs.
Oh, okay.
My bad. I actually meant the Chiefs.
Less interesting. I was going to say we all picked different wild cards, which it's competitive, but...
I was looking at the Chargers and thinking Chiefs, but yeah. So those are my picks.
Let's move over to the NFC, and Jackson, what do you think of the NFC East?
Man, I think it's a pretty bad division with a good team in it. I love the Eagles. I'm such a believer in Chip Kelly, not just as like a successful head coach, but I see him and Pete Carroll as kind of being like seminal coaches on the historical timeline of NFL development. Like what Chip Kelly's bringing to the NFL, there's a lot of like just common sense. Like if you strip the history and the way that things have always been done, and you're just everyone was starting from scratch on figuring out how to play NFL football, the Chip Kelly system makes a ton of sense. And you know, it's a system that requires a lot of buy-in, but that hasn't been an issue. There's been a total carousel at quarterback, and yet they just go out and have won a bunch of games under, you know, under him. And it's a style that still has played well in the cold weather. I think their defense will be a lot better this year. They've got a very good front seven, but their, you know, secondary struggled so much last year. And now they've got Byron Maxwell, and they've got Walter Thurman, which, you know, most of the folks listening to this podcast don't need to be educated on how good those guys are. They're going to be much better in the one position that they struggled at last year. They lost LeSean McCoy, but they replaced him with DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews. They added, you know, they still got Sproles. Jordan Matthews came on as a stud last year. I think Zach Ertz is a weapon. There's a lot to like with the Philadelphia Eagles, and I think that they're a team that, you know, is probably one of the two or three best in the NFC.
You're not high on the Cowboys then?
I do like the Cowboys. I think that it's easy to sell the impact that DeMarco Murray had short on that team. Say, oh, well, you know, behind that line, look at the lanes and whatever. People don't understand how dependent that offense was on DeMarco Murray. He had like 440-some touches last year. Like, that's a number that just doesn't exist in the modern NFL anymore. That's a ton of touches. They're expecting Julius Randle and Darren McFadden and potentially Gus Johnson to fill. That's a ton of production, and I don't think it's as simple as plug and play. I think DeMarco Murray is a truly special talent. So I do like the Cowboys. I love their offensive line. I am a Romo fan. Dez Bryant's one of my favorite players. But I don't know. 22nd in defense last year. I don't know where they got better on defense this year. I think they got worse on offense, losing Murray. So I think the Eagles got better. I think the Cowboys got a little worse, and that's why I'm choosing them.
I like it. Kenny, what are your thoughts on the East?
Yeah, I'll pick the Eagles, which means it'll probably be the Giants.
You're not the best color man in the league, folks. yeah, the East is tough for me because I like the Cowboys and the Eagles, but, you know, I think I'm going to have to agree with both of you. I think the Eagles are going to be tough this year. I actually think that Sam Bradford's going to be pretty good in that system. So, you know, I'm going with the Eagles as well. I like the Cowboys a lot. I think they could both kind of – it might come down to the wire between both those teams. But as Jackson said, I think the Cowboys' defense is going to be a liability. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. Did the Cowboys, like, kind of capture lightning in a bottle last year with their run game, or is it something that they can continue going forward and – Not miss a beat? That's a big question in my mind.
When was the last time a team won the NFC East 2 years in a row? I feel like it's been since the Donovan McNabb Eagles.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Thank you.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't think that the Giants are going to factor in, and obviously I don't think Washington is going to factor in. And you know, I think RG3's. He just, I don't know what happened to him. It was like crazy because he was so good his rookie year. And then obviously he tore his ACL and just hasn't been the same since.
Everything that people said was going to happen to Russell Wilson happened to Robert Griffin.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an interesting
one. It's a shame too, man, because I think that he ended up in one of the most dysfunctional organizations in professional sports. Yeah. And that's really hard for a quarterback to overcome. I mean, he had by quarterback efficiency, the greatest rookie season in NFL history. It's not like he was just some college guy who benefited from a system and couldn't make the transfer. I mean, they hosted a playoff game with very little surrounding talent his rookie year. They're constantly switching the offense. His coaches are just kill him publicly. There's no reason to trust leadership in that organization. There's no reason to trust the system. The best thing for Robert Griffin III is to go somewhere else as soon as he gets an opportunity. And I'm trying to reserve judgment on him as a player until then. That organization sucks.
Indeed.
On that note, let's move to the NFC North because I like ending that on that one. The NFC North is super interesting to me. I think all the teams in the division
got a lot more interesting last week.
Indeed, it did. Who's your pick in that division, Jackson?
It's still the Packers, but by less of a margin than pre-Jordy Nelson.
Right. That was what you were alluding to, I assume.
Yeah. I still think that they probably have one of the two or three best offensive lines in the NFL. I think Eddie Lacy is a bona fide every down lead back in the NFL, and he's still young with
Fat Eddie Lacy.
What's that?
Fat Eddie Lacy.
Yeah.
People just
yeah, man.
Off.
I mean, he's like Jerome Bettis fat though. Yeah. Hey, seriously, he's the modern day Jerome Bettis, and they have an offense that suits that. It's an offense that, at least in the past, you can't gear up against the run with all those weapons. Jordy Nelson probably being one of the five or six best receivers in the NFL over the last 5 years. Randall Cobb emerging as maybe the best slot receiver in the NFL. And Devontae Adams is a guy that Aaron Rodgers can't stop talking about. Oh, yeah, and they have Aaron Rodgers. That's a team that is, I thought, pre-Jordy Nelson was the one team – top to bottom roster-wise that could compete with the Seahawks from a pure talent perspective. But I think that losing Jordy Nelson is going to have a big effect. I think teams are going to be able to anticipate run a little bit better. And as I'm sure Kenny is waiting to jump in and say, Aaron Rodgers has struggled against the best defenses in the NFL. And, you know, losing Jordy Nelson certainly isn't going to help that.
Kenny? Don't tell me what I'm going to say.
Oh. Is that what you were going to say?
No, I was kidding. Come on, guys, what's light? Keep it light. No, he does struggle against good defense on the road, and because of that, the whole team suffers because they don't have anything else. I think that the Packers are going to win the division, but I think the season gets decided for the NFC North. I think the season is decided on November 15th. The Lions go to Lambeau. And if the Lions can beat Green Bay and Lambeau, then they finally deserve to win the division. If they can't, then they don't. But I think it'll be a close, maybe one game to difference, and the Lions need to win in Green Bay in order to prove themselves that they're finally over the hump.
Do you know when the last time the Lions beat the Packers in Lambeau?
I forget. Like
1990 or something?
Yeah, it's something ridiculous.
And I agree that the Lions are the team that they'll be competing with. I thought Green Bay was comfortably two games better than the Lions before the Jordy Nelson injury. But what's hard for me, and I just the common denominator between successful NFL teams and unsuccessful NFL teams is the quarterback. And that is – Detroit's going to have to be a lot better everywhere else to overcome the gap between Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford. They've got a in theory a very good offense, but even so, they were 19th last year, you know, and
that's crazy.
Second to worst in special teams. Yeah, you look at all the names in Detroit, but they are so horribly inefficient on offense. And Matthew Stafford is just a volume producer. He's not a good decision maker. He's got a big arm, but it's not a particularly accurate arm. His quarterback rating without having a Calvin Johnson, I got to think, would be bottom third in the NFL. So I just don't – I love Ameer Abdullah. I think Golden Tate is awesome. I think the offense, again, in theory, should be good. They'll score points and put up a lot of yards. But I just don't think Matt Stafford is a good enough quarterback to overtake the Packers.
I mean, I would probably disagree. I just think I think Ameer Abdullah was a huge addition. They haven't been right since on offense since Javid Best got concussed and basically retired. Before that, they were great. They were 5-1, 5-0 in his first five games, and then he got hurt. And then they haven't been the same since. They tried to do it with Reggie Bush. It didn't work because Reggie Bush isn't very good. And then they added, and I think Abdullah will be the difference, but also the difference will be Calvin Johnson staying healthy for 16 games. And Eric Ebron, I think, is going to have a breakout season.
I wonder how different their defense is going to be this year, because they were so good last year on defense. Suffocating, and I think that really got them. That was got them to where they were in terms of challenging. You know,
they trailed only the Seahawks and the Bills in defense last year, but
that was a good defense.
They lost the main reason for that.
Yeah, and that's the question, is like, how big of a difference is it losing Sue going to make?
There, I would venture to say that there is no more valuable skill on defense than pressure on the quarterback right up the middle. And there's only 3-4 guys in the NFL that can consistently collapse a pocket from the center.
And Haloti Ngata has been one of them.
That's true. That's true. Do you see how big of a gap do you see between Sue and Ngata?
I mean, it's something. But, you know, I always, I don't know. I've been scared off of elite defensive tackles since Albert Haynesworth. So I've sort of just been scared off the whole elite defensive tackle just because it's such a brutal position to play. It's just so much depends on being in the right scheme and coaches using you well. But I do think that because Detroit has the same coaches and the proper system that they had last year, that's still in there. I think that the two players themselves at this stage in their career might be separated by a lot, but I think there's a chance that Sue gets worse in Miami and that Ngata gets better in Detroit.
Interesting. I think, I'm going with the Packers in this division. I think the Lions are going to challenge them, and those teams both could make the playoffs.
DeAndre Levy, huge, huge underrated player. I mean, he's always like kind of in the top 100, but still, I think he's like,
we don't talk about him very much.
One thing too. I don't want to sleep too hard on the Vikings. You know, which divisions without talking about how much better I think they'll be. I think they'll beat the Lions and the Packers each once this year. I think with Peterson, and you know, I really like Teddy Bridgewater. Like, I really, really like Teddy Bridgewater. I think their offense is going to be much, much better than it was last year. I see them as a surprise 8-win team with the potential to win 9.
There we go. And I was actually going to add that as well. And I actually think the Bears, you know, there's so many question marks around the Bears this year, but they're going to be one of my teams to watch just because, you know, new system, new coordinator, new coaches. I think that a lot rides on how Cutler ends up playing, but I think he's, you know, still a talented player, talented quarterback if he can keep his head on straight, which, you know, obviously in the past he hasn't really done. But I think the Bears could be another team that are better than people think they're going to be. And I don't think they're going to win the division, but I think they're not going to be as much of a pushover as a lot of people are making them out to be this year. So the NFC North, to me, is a very interesting division, very tough division. And moving from there, we get to a not very tough division in the NFC South. Last year, I want to say the winning team in the division was 7-9, and that was the Carolina Panthers. They snuck in. Am I right on that? They were 7-9, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were.
I was just off the top of my head. But
7-8. Yeah, they were 7-8-1.
7-8-1. There you go. So, so that's an interesting division. I think the Saints have taken a couple steps back, even from last year, just losing Jimmy Graham, trading away some of their stuff, and, you know, releasing Junior Gallette, things like that. They seem to be in, you know, they're up against the ropes right now. They could maybe punch their way out, but I don't know. I think the Falcons are going to be better. I think the Falcons are probably the best team in that division to me. I think after Kelvin Benjamin went down, the Falcons overtook the Panthers. I think I would have picked the Panthers before that, but, you know, I think I believe in Dan Quinn. I think he can kind of turn that defense around. I think he's got some pieces on that defense that he could really use, and I think they already had a good offense. You know, their passing offense is pretty loaded with Julio Jones, Roddy White, and Matt Ryan. And so, to me, this is a really interesting division, and I think I'm going to be picking the Falcons. Jackson, what do you think?
Yeah, the Falcons, too. I think Julio Jones is, you know, if we're going to dip toes into the fantasy pool, the only guy I've got rated higher than him is Antonio Brown. I think from a pure physical ability standpoint, he might be the best wide receiver in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And that just is so valuable these days. I mean, he was double covered all last year and still just put up absurd numbers. I'm picking the Falcons more because of the rest of the division than because I think the
right.
Falcons are a really good team. They had no running game to speak of last year. They did invest you know, with Tevin Coleman, they've got Devontae Freeman, Anton Smith, guys who were productive in small shots last year. I think they'll run better. But they had the worst defense in the NFL last year, and that's a tough thing to bounce back from. The issue is that, you know, the offenses they're going to face, the Saints presumably got worse, losing, like you said, Jimmy Graham, Pierre Thomas, Kenny Stills. I mean, that's a ton of Drew Brees' targets that are gone now that they have to figure out who that's going to go to. The addition of C.J. Spiller, I think, is very nice. Yeah. But I still think there's some drop-offs. I think Brandon Cooks is going to be an absolute stud. But, you know, they don't play defense either, and losing Junior Gallette doesn't make things any easier in that regard. The Panthers, I think, are probably the team best poised to, you know, win the division from the Falcons. But losing Kelvin Benjamin's a huge deal. I mean, I think that he had a higher percentage of his quarterback's targets maybe than any other wide receiver in the NFL last year besides Brown. You know, that's a lot of targets they have to find. They lost D'Angelo Williams, which means if the ever-fragile Jonathan Stewart goes down, there's a big question mark there as well. The thing to remember about the Panthers, they're only one season removed from being the number three team overall in the NFL by DVOA and winning 12 games. I still like Cam Newton. I don't love Cam Newton, but I do think he's a top quarterback, and that's what you need to compete. So for me, I've got Atlanta first and then Carolina second. I think the Buccaneers are better. I think a Lovie Smith Buccaneers team is going to be way better than the Rutgers coach that everyone hated. What was his name?
Well, Greg Schiano, but you know, yeah. Lovie Smith was there last year.
Yeah, I do. but I mean, also, it's like I don't think with NFL coaches that you see very often a huge shift in one season. I think it takes a little bit to put in a culture, and you need a quarterback. And I like Jameis Winston. I like Jameis Winston as a Cam Newton type player. I think that he's got a ton of talent, and you know, Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson, if they both stay healthy, you're talking about one of the best receiver combos out there. I think Austin Seferian Jenkins is going to develop into a weapon, and I think that Doug Martin and Charles Sims are both going to be really effective as well. So, I mean, again, I'm not talking about the Buccaneers as a contender, but I do think they win 6 or 7 games.
Yeah, me too. I'll pick the Falcons.
All right, so we're all picking the Falcons in that division, but I think we all would probably agree the Panthers are going to challenge as well.
That's probably the division I feel least confident in my champion about.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think it's, you know, I'm not heavily pro-Falcons and thinking the Panthers are going to tank. I think it's going to come down to those two teams. I really think the Panthers have a great defense, but I just question what they'll do on offense with losing, you know, Kelvin Benjamin and kind of having a lot of questions on the offensive line. It's going to be interesting. All right, so we'll move to the final division, the NFC West. You know, I can guess what you're going to say on this, but let's just, let's have it. What do you think of the NFC West?
Yes, can me?
Yes, sorry. I am addressing Jackson here.
I think that there's a 50% chance that we see the best Seahawks team that has ever existed this year.
All right.
I think that this is probably the most, outside of the Colts, this is probably the most slam dunk division champion. The Rams have never been consistent. I don't see anything that makes me think that's any different this year. The Cardinals, I think, played with, you know, they won all of their close games last year. And winning close games just historically, statistically, is not a repeatable skill. There's too many variables. And they came up, you know, the river every time last year. But I think you saw, you know, they're not as good as the Seahawks. The 49ers have gone from, you know, being half of the best rivalry in the NFL to presumably being an absolute sewage explosion this year. So I think that, you know, the Seahawks probably win this division by a couple of games.
I think Jackson's out of his mind. I got the 49ers by at least 4 games.
Now you're just trolling.
Yeah, but I want to point out that I haven't been trolling up to this point. yeah, I don't
very,
know.
Very good job of restraining yourself.
There's not really much to add to what Jackson said. I think the Seahawks very well might have the best defense of all time if it goes right. And I got them winning a division. I don't know that I would pick any other team for a wild card.
Fair enough. I'm going with the Seahawks as well, and I think, you know, we've touched on the NFC West a lot, so we can kind of just leave it at that. I think people kind of know what to expect, and that was a great kind of tour through the NFL.
Well, let's pick our six playoff teams because we got our four division winners. We all picked the exact same teams, right? So we all picked Philadelphia, Green Bay, Atlanta, and Seattle. So who would your two wild cards be?
I bet you we all go with the same six teams here. I've got Detroit and Dallas as wild cards.
Kenny, what do you think?
Yeah, I've got Detroit. I just don't know if I'm going to go with Dallas. I just think that I think their offensive line performed above their heads last year. I do agree that losing to DeMarco Murray is a bigger deal than Dallas or anyone else makes it out to be. Their defense isn't very good. So, you know, I'm going to...
If not them, who?
I know. That's the next thing. That will be my follow-up to that.
he's stalling right now.
It's because it's a tough decision. But, you know, I do want to believe that... I think the Saints are better than people think. I think that Brandon Cooks is a breakout player this year, one of the best options weapons in the NFL, but they did lose too much. So I'm going to say that it's the Minnesota Vikings.
I love it.
And I am going with the Cowboys, and I think it came down between the Cardinals and the Cowboys to me. But I agree that the Cardinals, I don't know what happened last year. They were able to kind of, they were just able to capture lightning in a bottle is a term I guess you could use, but they just wouldn't lose these games, and it was kind of crazy. So, I'm going with the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys and the Lions, and those would be my six teams.
And taking it all the way to the end, I have the Seahawks over the Colts in just an absolute shit show blowout.
That'd be cool.
Can you imagine, too? One of the most frustrating debates out there is the Russell Wilson versus Andrew Luck one, because it's like whenever you get into these arguments or conversations, it always becomes about what one of them can't do or what their weaknesses are, and you can't just say hey, these are both really awesome young quarterbacks that are great for their teams. 2 weeks of Wilson versus Luck profiles and arguments would be just unbearable.
That would be the worst.
Yeah, I mean, we were one game away from it happening last year, and if the Colts didn't shit the bed against the Patriots, they would have shit the bed against the Seahawks, and it would have been a blowout. But, you know, just in that scenario, if that did happen, you know, you're talking about the Seahawks going to three straight Super Bowls and playing Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Andrew Luck, and really being, you know, and history will forget how much different that Seahawks team was by the second half of that game because of injuries.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
Do you guys want to give Super Bowl picks, or are you too shy?
I'm right now, and this is just kind of a shot in the dark for me, but I picked the Steelers and the Seahawks to make it to the Super Bowl and the Seahawks to win it. I just really like their offense a lot, and I think their defense is going to be better, the Steelers. And I think the Seahawks, like you guys kind of said, are going to be the best team that they've – I think this is going to be the best Seahawks team that we've seen. So,
Jackson.
Yeah, in the AFC, I've got the Colts over the Steelers in the AFC Championship game. In the NFC, I do have the Seahawks. I have them beating the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. One thing I said in my article last week that I'll probably say a couple more times before the season starts. You know, the Seahawks have been, accumulatively speaking, the best team in the NFL for the last 3 years. They haven't really gotten weaker anywhere in those 3 years. And Russell Wilson has had objectively speaking, the most successful, productive first 3 years that a quarterback has ever had. And he hasn't had Jimmy Graham yet. Like this, yeah. This team could win 14 or 15 games even with a rough schedule. I'm not predicting that they will because there's lots of variables. You never know how injuries are going to go. Your team wins. But I think, you know, when you look top to bottom, this is going to be one of the most talented rosters that the NFL has seen in a very, very long time. There's no surprises with the system. Everyone that matters is comfortable with it, and no reason to think that there isn't going to be any continuity. I mean, they lost that Super Bowl. I don't care how homerish this sounds. They lost that Super Bowl because they were playing at half strength on defense. You know, there's no way that final drive goes 8 for 8 through the air against a full-strength Seahawks defense. It's never happened. It never would happen. And, you know, I'm not taking the victory away from the Patriots. They did what they had to do to win. But this Seahawks team is going to be better than that one.
Right.
Yep, I agree.
Well, I think given that this episode of the podcast also has a good 30 to 40 minutes with Rob Staton, it would be a good idea now to wrap it up. Just you want Danny, you want to promote that show one more time?
Yeah, just again, I mean, look forward to Jackson and I are going to have our podcast on Wednesday nights, Wednesday evenings, and then we'll either post Wednesday or Thursday morning. And yeah, we're just going to go through the games. Jackson's going to give his picks. I'm going to give my picks. You know, Jackson, if people, we'll point to it on the site, but if people have read Jackson's picks column in the past, it's excellent. He really knows his shit in terms of, you know, how these things work. He's going to help people win their office pools and things like that. So I think it's going to be a fun time, and it'll be entertaining to just go through every game and kind of learn about every team. So yeah, what were you going to say?
Just that, yeah, his picks are crazy accurate. You got to bribe him to find out how he does it.
Yes, exactly. So look for that coming up. We'll have one out before the beginning of the season, the first week, and look for that every week.
All right.
Yeah,
thanks, guys.
I'm really excited. I do miss the picks article, and so I'm really excited to kind of get back into that flow of looking at all the other teams. I felt it made me a more versed overall NFL fan, so I'm really eager to be doing it again. And Danny, I'm happy to be doing it with you, man.
Yeah, definitely. Likewise.
Well, you can follow Jackson at Jackson Bevins on Twitter, and also read his shit on field goals when it appears. Thank you.
Alrighty, thanks, Jackson.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, so that was our interview with Jackson. I want to thank Rob and Jackson for coming on to the show today to promote their new podcast with us, respectively, myself and Danny. So make sure to check out 3000 NFL Mock Draft as well as Deep Balls. Those will be on Tuesday and Wednesday this season, as well as some immediate reaction show with me and Danny after every game. And Danny, any final thoughts?
No, I think that's good. You know, we covered everything, and let's just let people go at this point.
All right, sounds good. Remember that the Reel and the Field Goals is presented by the Ballard Agency in Kirkland, Washington. Tell them that Field Goals sent you. Go to ballardagency.com. When it's time to any kind of insurance you need, go to them and tell them that we sent you. So do that. And also follow me at Kenneth Arthur S., Danny at Field Goals. Go to fieldgoals.com. Send us $100 and all of that.
$100 bill.
A Chris 100. And you'll still get Real in the Field Goals every week starting coming back next Thursday. Thanks for listening.